Hey, hi everyone. Welcome along to your last session for TechEd 2014. I know I'm standing between you guys and beers, so yeah, let's see if we can get through this. Hopefully you guys learn a few cool, interesting things. And then feel free to find me in the closing drinks later. We can have a bit more of a chat if you like. So my name is Nick Westbrook, and I work for Provoke Solutions here in Auckland. We are Microsoft partners, and we do a lot of work in the Azure space to help our customers realize the benefit of what the cloud services can bring to their business. Now, we work with quite a range of different customers, and a lot of our customers have fairly small IT teams. Well, even if they have larger IT teams, they may not necessarily have the resource available internally to be able to support a lot of the deployments and development that we do for our customers. So they often look towards us to maintain the stuff that we build, which is great. But as you can imagine, they'd way rather prefer to be spending money with us on building new services or improving services rather than paying us to continually do maintenance tasks over and over again on the stuff that they've already bought. So in order to improve the cost effectiveness of our services to our customers, as well as actually improving the efficiency in our own business, we try to use automation as far as possible to ensure that the work that our engineers are doing is actually adding value rather than just wasting time on menial tasks, doing the same sort of thing over and over again. So today, I'd like to show you some of the services available in Azure, which we've used in our customer deployments and in our own business as well, to hopefully give you some ideas as to ways that you can automate your own deployments in order to save yourself some time, money, and effort. So our agenda for today then, just like to start off with sort of a quick overview of automation, sort of some use cases, why do we automate things in the first place? And then the focus of the session today is on the Azure Automation Service, which is a pretty cool new powerful service which is still in preview in Azure, so some of you may not have come across it before. Following on from that, we look at Autoscale, which is a great service to use for saving you money in your deployments and ensuring that your services are running optimally. However, it does have a fair few gotchas which aren't actually advertised, which we've found out, so I'll show you some of those soon. And then following on from there, I'll just show you some other things that you can do in Azure. There's actually a whole bunch of different services which Microsoft has provided in order for you to focus on the important stuff and not get bogged down with menial tasks. So firstly, why automate in the first place? Well, I sort of touched on it in my intro, but essentially we automate to allow us to work on more important stuff. So no one likes doing boring tasks over and over again. And people are expensive. If any of you business owners out there, you know how much it costs to employ people. So you'd much rather be employing them to build new stuff, push the boundaries, work on cutting-edge technologies, rather than doing menial tasks over and over. I've seen some stats before that sort of 80% of IT cost is just around keeping the lights on, which is massive. So if we can go some ways towards reducing that by implementing automation, it goes a long way to save money in the business. So other than working on more important stuff, reduces human error. So computers are awesome at doing the same thing over and over and over again. You give it a script to run, it'll run that same script exactly the same way every time. And you can be pretty confident that the outcome of that script will be the same as when you ran it the previous time. Humans, on the other hand, we tend to get a bit creative. We may follow some instructions, perhaps skip a step, realize that, oh, we did this step the last time and it didn't really work that way, so I'm going to try and substitute another step in here. And sometimes we muck it up, and we get to the end of it and the outcome isn't exactly what we imagine. So reducing human errors is a great reason for automating stuff as well. Following on from that, repeatable processes. So this helps a lot around training. Obviously, if you've got a new person joining your team, you don't need to explain every step of the process for them to do it. You can basically just point them towards the script, say, run this script against these objects, and it'll accomplish the goals that you need. So you as a manager, as a team lead, can be pretty confident that because you've run this process exactly the same way before and it gave you good output, when your new start runs that same process, you should have the same sort of output from there. So some good candidates for automation then. Pretty much anything that saves you time, money, or effort is a good idea to automate. Stuff like deployment and configuration. Some of you guys are server engineers out there, you know, your dad would have deployed multiple servers in your lifetime. Myself, I probably deployed hundreds, especially with VMs. You tend to do the same thing over and over again. So any way that we can automate deployment or configuration of our services in Azure would save us a lot of time. Patching and maintaining VMs. No one likes patching. It's one of my personal hates. Every time Microsoft releases a new bunch of patches, you need to make sure that every month you go in there and patch all your servers, make sure you've backed them all up first, check that systems are working after you've installed the patches. If it doesn't work, you have to roll it back. It's quite a mission. So if we can use some way to automate this process, that would save a lot of time. So only if things go wrong, get the humans involved. If it all works smoothly, don't worry about it. Carry on going. Wrong button, sorry. backups. Oftentimes, backups need to get done out of hours. Probably a lot of you are already using automated backup, which is a great idea. There's really no point in a human sitting there, backing up a service every night out of hours, paying for their overtime. Content refresh. So we do this a lot in our business. If you have a sort of test environment and a production environment and you want to test some changes into it, you want to probably make sure that you've got the production content in your test environment so that you can hammer the test environment and make sure it stands up rather than doing that sort of work against your production environment. If you tend to be doing this a lot, it's probably a good idea to put some automation in place so that you can, at a click of a button, take all the content from production, stick it into test, and then start going with it. Lastly, monitoring. So obviously, computers are great at monitoring each other. So you can, for example, with SCOM, you can set monitoring on a machine, and then when something wrong happens to that machine, it can send you an alert. Another great use case for automation. So pretty much summing that up then, good candidates for automation, any repeatable process that you're probably going to be doing more than a few times. So if it's a once-off, probably no point in automating it, but if you think there's the likelihood that you'll be doing this again, it's probably best to put the effort in up front to make sure that you've got this process automated. Cool, so enough of the intro. On to Azure Automation. So Azure Automation is a pretty awesome service. Really powerful, really flexible. It got announced during the Microsoft Build Conference earlier this year. And if any of you have played with the service management automation components in the new version of System Center Orchestrator, you realize how powerful that is in actually maintaining and automating your on-premises deployments. Well, Azure Automation basically takes those exact same capabilities and moves them into the cloud. So it gives you the same ability to automate your cloud deployments the way that you automate your on-premises deployments. And the best thing about it is that you don't need to worry about any of the infrastructure that's required to actually make this work. It's natively available in Azure. You basically just tell it what you want it to do, and it goes ahead and does it. It's still in preview at the moment, which means it's free for you to play around with, but it's probably not really ready for production use. Obviously, no SLAs around it because it's in preview, but there's a lot of stuff you can do with it, and there's quite a community growing around it as well. So if you're not really that great with scripting, there's plenty of scripts available out on the internet to give you an idea of where to start with things or actually just to actually use in your deployments. So, because it's in preview, you'll need to actually sign up for it first. So if you log into your Azure Management Portal, you won't see it in the menu on the left-hand side. You actually need to request that feature, which I'll show you how to do soon. So pretty much once it is available, you'll see that it's essentially a workflow execution engine service. So what that means is you give it a workflow to run, and it runs it. So it's built on PowerShell workflow, which is really powerful. This is a new feature that came out in PowerShell 3.0. Very similar to native regular PowerShell that you're all used to, but with a few differences. I'm not going to go into those differences too much today because I could probably do a whole session on PowerShell workflow itself. What I'm going to be focusing on today is more about how you can use workflows, you know, to automate stuff. Other than that, because it's in Azure, it's a PaaS service, so you don't need to worry about any of the underlying infrastructure. And because Microsoft's looking after it for you, you know, it's inherently highly available and scalable. So you don't need to worry about the server that's executing your workflows failing. There'll just be another instance which spawns up and runs the workflows for you. So how does it all work? So there's a few components in Azure Automation. The first one to look at is the concept of a runbook. So as I said before, if you've seen the on-prem SMA stuff in Orchestrator, this will look very familiar to you because it's essentially exactly the same stuff, but just running out of cloud. So looking at that piece of code, you can see it looks pretty much like PowerShell. How PowerShell, or where PowerShell has functions, runbooks have workflows. So you'll see that this is a bit of a Hello World workflow. This is workflow Hello World at the top. You put in some parameters, which you're going to be expecting. So in this case, we're saying that the parameter is not mandatory, and we're going to want the person's name. And then essentially we just say, write output, hello, dollar name. So if you've done any PowerShell before, you'd understand what that does. It's pretty much the same stuff. Then we have the concept of assets. Now this is really cool. So with regular PowerShell, there's kind of no real way to centralize settings or variables that you use across multiple PowerShell scripts. With PowerShell workflow and or the SMA stuff, you have this concept of assets. Now, an asset is basically a setting which gets stored centrally, and it's usable across any of the runbooks that you have in your automation account. So assets are things like connections, connections into your Azure subscription. Even connections into other Azure subscriptions. So provided that you have access into an Azure subscription, you can add a connection into your asset store in Azure Automation and leverage that for running workflows against. And it's not just Azure. You can put connections into Office 365 tenants. So out of Azure Automation, you can automate Exchange Online or SharePoint Online or pretty much any of the Office 365 stack, provided that there are PowerShell commandlets in order for you to do that. And it's not restricted to Microsoft stuff either. Pretty much any third-party system can have a connection added into Azure Automation, you know, provided that the vendor of that system has built PowerShell workflow or built commandlets which allow you to do that in PowerShell workflow. Other assets, credentials. So storing usernames and passwords or certificate-based credentials. This is pretty key, as you can imagine. If we're connecting into all these different environments, you don't necessarily want to be storing credentials in each workflow. Imagine with regular PowerShell scripting, if you want to automate something, you don't want to keep this username and password in plain text in the script file. So what you can do here is actually add that credential as an asset, and it's stored encrypted in the backend databases. So no one can access it except for you, but your runbooks will be able to leverage that setting in order to connect to different environments. Modules. So if you're used to PowerShell modules, these are pretty much the same thing, but they're just packaged slightly differently. I'll show you a bit of an example of how that's different soon. So if you know yourselves, if you want to using PowerShell to change Active Directory, you need to load in the Active Directory module in order to get the commandlets to do this. By default, in Azure Automation, you only get the Microsoft Azure PowerShell commandlets. So if you want to be writing code against Office 365, you need to download those PowerShell modules and upload them into your Azure environment if you're to leverage the commandlets there. Schedules. So because runbooks aren't necessarily always just once-off, if you want to automate things, it's a good idea to be able to run workbooks whenever you want. So you can create one schedule and allocate that to multiple runbooks. So you can have 10 runbooks all running at 10 p.m. And we can also store centrally different variables. So any variable that you want, If you want to leverage it across multiple runbooks, it's probably easiest to just save it in one place, so that every time you need to go and update that variable, you update it in one place, and all the runbooks that are referencing it will get updated automatically. Out of all of that, we also get some cool analysis. So we have full logging available. So any workflow that runs in Azure Automation, you can export a log of exactly what that workflow did, whether it was successful or failed, and any output from that workflow as well. We can also look at job history. There's a pretty cool graph available in the management portal where you can see completed, running, suspended workflows. And I'll show you later that you can actually sort of filter that view to give you a better idea as to for you to find the stuff that you're actually looking for. What's key as well, if you don't know much about PowerShell workflow, one of the key features of it is that you can actually suspend workflow. So, for example, this is great in automation. If you have a use case where you want to have some long-running process and run that against, say, 10 or 20 servers, and then you kind of want a checkpoint so that when that process is finished against those servers, you want the system to make sure that you can actually go in there and verify that everything's all good, and then it can move on to step two of the process. So PowerShell workflow actually allows you to suspend workflows through code. So you can say, go ahead, do all this stuff to those servers, then wait for me, and then I'll come and check it, and then I'll continue running after that. Cool, so how all that hangs together then? We have runbooks, which reference assets. Those all get executed in the engine against targets, and we get some pretty cool reporting and analysis out of it. So enough of the theory. Let's have a look at automation. Cool, it works. Right, so this is my Azure Management Portal, which you guys are probably all used to. As I said before, because Azure Automation is actually in preview at the moment, by default you won't get it on the menu on the left-hand side. So like the other previews, what you need to do to add it in is just to click your name at the top, then click on View My Bill, which will open up another window. This process takes a little while, so here's one I've prepared earlier. When you open up the View My Bill area, you basically click on Preview Features at the top, and then click on the green button on the right, which says Try It Now. You'll see that for me, it says I'm already signed up. Once you click on that, on the menu on the left, you'll see that you have an automation account. So from here, you need to create an account in order to store all your runbooks inside. Give it any name you want. And you'll notice under the region setting here that there's actually only one option. Because the service is still in preview, it's actually only available in the East US region. Once it gets to general availability, I'm assuming it'll be available in all the Azure regions. So once you've created your account, here's one I've made earlier. You click into there, and you'll see in the overview screen, there's a few links to help you get started with it. One I found particularly interesting is this one at the bottom. It says, download runbooks from the community. If you're not used to PowerShell or you don't have a lot of experience writing PowerShell scripts or even PowerShell workflow, you click on that link, it takes you to the Script Center, which is a great resource to pretty much do anything you want with automation. Just looking through here quickly, there's the Hello World example, which I showed you earlier. A script to connect to an Azure Virtual Machine. Stop Azure Virtual Machines. Provision environments. There's even scripts which allow you to copy files to and from virtual machines themselves. So actually inside the VM, you can access through PowerShell workflow. Coming back into the portal though, see on the top, we've got three tabs. So there's the dashboard tab, the runbooks and assets. So I'll start from the right. Assets, as I explained earlier, is an area where you can store settings, which are going to be common across all your workflows. So by default, the only thing you get inside here is the Azure PowerShell module at the bottom. What I've done is added a certificate in order to authenticate to my Azure subscription, and I've also added a connection into my Azure subscription here. So this is the same subscription I'm actually running the automation account in, but as I said earlier, you can add other connections as well. So if you have multiple subscriptions, you can add connections into each of those subscriptions straight into this same Azure Automation account. So clicking into that connection, you'll see that I just need to enter my subscription ID, which you can get from the management portal or through PowerShell. And this is the certificate that it's going to use to authenticate itself. So that was the certificate that I just mentioned earlier. These other two are interesting. So as I said before, natively, this is Azure, so it doesn't know about SharePoint, for example. But if I actually want to create workflows which reference SharePoint, I just need to upload the SharePoint module into here, and suddenly I have all these actions available for me to run code against the SharePoint environment. So things like add SPO user, connect SPO service, all the usual stuff you're used to dealing with if you use the SharePoint Online PowerShell module. Once I've got all my assets in place, I can go across to Runbooks. So this is where I store all my workflows. So workflows are modular, which means they can call each other. So the same as like PowerShell scripts can call each other. So if you're going to be doing a lot of work, connecting into an Azure environment in order to start or stop VMs or update a website or something like that, the first step will always be to connect into an Azure subscription. So it makes a lot of sense to have a PowerShell workflow which actually does that bit of the process, which is the one I've got up here for Connect Azure. That code is straight out of the script center, so I won't go into it too much, but if you have a look afterwards, you'll see it in there. The one I'm going to show you today is Stop My Azure VMs. So this is a pretty good use case. I remember doing a session at TechEd last year, and I had a question from someone in the audience saying, they don't want to waste money running VMs overnight, so is there any way to automatically stop them overnight so that he can save some money? And at the time, there was actually no way. The only way you could do it was to run some script on premises. However, now, you can actually implement that through Azure Automation. So that's what I'm going to show you. So just to show you how it all works, if I click on Virtual Machines on the left, here are two VMs that I've got which are running. If I go back to my automation account and have a look at the runbook, you see I have a few tabs along the top. If I go across to the authoring tab, this is the same technology that Visual Studio Online uses. So if I go to the draft tab, you'll see I've got sort of syntax highlighting, and there's even some sort of limited autocomplete stuff in here as well. So this is a workflow called Stop My Azure VMs. So I'll just run through it for you. So it's going to expect a parameter of an Azure connection. So this is a connection which I've already created in my assets folder. From there, it's going to call my other runbook up here, Connect Azure, and it's going to connect into that Azure connection which I passed through. Then it's going to select the Azure subscription, which you'll all be used to doing if you do PowerShell work in Azure. And then it's going to say write output. So this will either write it out into the log file or onto the screen, starting to shut down. And it's just going to do a get Azure VM and stick that into a variable called $VMs. And then I'm going to run a for each loop. So I can say for each VM in $VMs, stop Azure VM. And then I'm going to say force and then sort of stay provision just for the demo purpose. So you can see it's pretty much the PowerShell that you're used to using, just handled in a slightly different way. What is cool, though, is because it is Azure PowerShell, I mean, it's Azure PowerShell workflow, you can actually put this parallel option in. So what that means is instead of stopping each of these machines in order, it'll actually spawn multiple threads and stop all these machines at exactly the same time, which is quite handy. So if I click on test, you'll see it saving the runbook draft, and then it's going to ask me for the name of the Azure connection that I want to use. Subscription is called TENS Demo. So I'll put that into there, click on OK, and it says the runbook was successfully submitted. So essentially from here, a copy of that runbook is going to be sent to the compiler engine. It's going to get compiled, and then it's going to get passed on to the actual workflow execution engine. Now, this whole process takes a few minutes, so I'm not going to let you be bored waiting for it to happen. I'll show you another little cool thing while that's doing its thing. So as I said before, if you want to run any code against, for example, SharePoint Online, here I've got Get SPO Sites, another workflow. And you can see that I've got some PowerShell commandlets from the SharePoint Online module, like Get SPO Site. So how do I actually put that in there? If I go across to my assets, you'll see at the bottom I've got the option to import module. Now, the modules that are used by Azure Automation are pretty similar to the ones that are available that you'd normally just install on your machine, but they're packaged slightly differently. So if we want to use PowerShell, for example, I go across to the Microsoft Download Center, and there's the SharePoint Online Management Shell. I just download that. It's just an MSI file, which you guys, probably a lot of you have already installed. Run it, and it'll add commandlets into your own machine. Now, how we get that into Azure Automation is if you look in your local machine under Program Files, running that MSI file for the SharePoint Online module creates a folder under here called SharePoint Online Management Shell. So what we do is go into it and basically zip up this folder. So we can send to zip folder. It says, do you want to place it on the desktop? Go yes. And then we go back into Azure Automation, say import module, browse for a file, look on the desktop. And there it is, Microsoft Online SharePoint. You say OK, and upload that. And that's pretty much it. Once we do that, we have all those commandlets available from that module for us to use in Azure PowerShell. Cool, so let's have a look how our runbook is going. So there's Stop My Azure VMs. If we go across to jobs, jobs are essentially instances of a runbook. And you see, oh, that's only for the published ones. So we go across to author, draft, is the output pane. Oh, it's still running. I've noticed that because it's in preview, I think it's, oh, look, it's just completed. It does take a little while. So if I go across, if I expand that, you'll see here's the results of the runbook. So operation succeeded for each of those VMs that I set to stop. So hopefully if we go across to our virtual machines and I refresh the page, we should see that they are hopefully stopped running. There they are. So that's quite handy. For a once-off, but obviously we can still schedule it as well. So if we want this to happen at 7 p.m. every day to make sure that our development environment machines are turned off overnight, we can go into Runbooks, click Stop My Azure VMs, go across to Schedule on the top, and either link it to a new schedule or link it to an existing one. If I say link to a new one, I can call this nightly 7 p.m. And we say daily 1900. Recur every day. Okay. And then it's going to ask us for that one parameter that I was expecting to get passed into the runbook. So I'm going to put TENS Demo because that's the name of my subscription. Click OK. And that's pretty much it. So now every night at 7 p.m., those machines will get shut down. How do you mean? Oh, I think, oh, good question. Yeah, I think it's the region that the data center's in. Yep. Cool. So, hope you found that interesting. So as you can see, it's incredibly powerful and flexible and extendable. Can do it pretty much whatever you want. So you know, don't spend your time on boring tasks. Azure Automation is there to handle all that stuff in your Azure environment if you need it to be. It's built on PowerShell workflow, which means that you know, if you know PowerShell, you have a pretty good idea of how to use this stuff already. It's highly available and a scalable engine. So you don't need to worry about any of the underlying infrastructure to actually run this stuff. Azure actually handles all that for you. You just need to tell it which runbooks you want it to run. And it allows you to automate pretty much anything. It's pretty cool. Go have a play with it. How much does it cost? So that's a question probably on your minds. Well, luckily enough, it's actually free at the moment because it's still in preview. When it goes to general availability, the plan is for it to cost $20 US per month. But that gives you 10,000 minutes of runtime per month for your workbooks. There is a free tier available as well, which provides runtime for 500 minutes a month. I'm not sure, actually. No doubt there'll be some deal for MSDN people. It usually is for a lot of services. Cool. So if you want to download the slides later, here's just a few links. That link to the Script Center at the bottom again. And there's actually an awesome MVA course handling all this stuff. So if you want to know more about it, you know, download the slides, click those links. I'll give you a minute to take a picture. Cool. All right. So moving on to Autoscale then. Now, Autoscale probably a lot of you have heard about. It's an awesome feature available across a few services in Windows Azure. And it's really good if your services have fluctuating demand patterns. Because what it does is it actually ensures that your services are running optimally for the demand that they're currently under, but it also makes sure that you're saving money when that demand drops as well. As I said before, there are a few gotchas with it, though, which aren't automatically obvious, so I'll take you through some of those. Firstly, scaling methods, just so we are all on the same page. Two ways of scaling, essentially, scaling up and scaling out. Scaling up, you have the same service, but you just increase its grunt, increase its power to be able to run more stuff for you. So for example, if you have a web server which has one CPU core and 1 gig of RAM and you scale it up, there can be 2 CPU cores, 2 gigs of RAM, etc. But it's still the same machine. Scaling out, on the other hand, you still have your one machine with 1 CPU core, 1 gig of RAM, but you can add additional instances of that machine. So you can have sort of 5, 10, however many you want. The benefit of that is that as demand increases, you can add additional instances to be able to spread the load to make sure that your service is actually giving a good experience to your end users. And this is the type of scaling which Autoscale does. So what can be autoscaled? These four services. So Azure websites, virtual machines, cloud services, and mobile services. In the Azure Management Portal, you actually see that there will be an autoscale option under the Scale tab for each of these. Logic. So the way autoscale works is that you give it some parameters which you think it should monitor. And then it monitors your services to see if they fit within those parameters. If a match is made, then it follows logic whether to add an instance or remove one. So types of logic we can set. We can scale by schedule. So for example, every day between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m., increase the minimum instance size of my website to 3 instances because I know that it's going to be busy during those hours. Outside of those hours, take it down to 1 to save some money. We can also tell it to scale by metric. So this means that it monitors the services that you're running. So say, for example, when CPU goes above 60%, you know, your website's coming under load, so add an extra instance to be able to cater for that load. So hopefully the load gets spread across multiple instances to make things run a bit better. The way you configure it, so for example, this is one for websites. So you can see in the current portal, it's fairly limited. We can tell it to scale by none, which means no only time-based, or tell it to scale by CPU. In the new Azure portal, there's actually a few more options. The portal's still in preview, but it allows you to actually access those options. To access the full range of options, though, you need to use the REST API, which I'm not that good at. You probably need to get one of your developer friends to help you. So, for example, in this case, you can see instance count set to between 3 and 6, and target CPU 60 to 80%. So it's going to continually monitor your deployment, and if CPU goes above 80%, it will add an extra instance until it gets to a maximum of 6 instances. If it goes below 60%, it's going to drop an instance until it gets to a minimum of 3 instances. So all of that's fully configurable. Here's where the gotchas come in, though. So we found, we actually implemented this in a lot of our deployments for our customers, and with varying degrees of result of effectiveness, because it's not really great for sudden changes. The reason for that is because, by default, the monitoring window is actually 45 minutes long. So what that means is that if you have a utilization pattern, as you can see on the screen, sort of most of the day, things are just ticking along, CPU utilization maybe 10% or less, and then suddenly 8 a.m. every day, you have this massive influx of people, and CPU spikes. It goes up to sort of around 80, 90%. Autoscale is still monitoring your deployment, but it won't actually do much at this point. Because the monitoring window is 45 minutes long, the logic goes that the average CPU over the last 45 minutes is still only around 20%. So even though at this point in time it really needs to be ramping up the instance count, it's not going to do it because the logic doesn't fit. In addition to that, average CPU doesn't mean the actual average over that whole point in time. The way the Azure Fabric works is that at every around 5 to 10 minutes, it'll do a query as to how much sort of CPU that deployment is currently using. And it'll store that value in a table. And then when the Azure, when the autoscale logic runs, it queries the values that it's collected over the last 45 minutes. That may mean that it could have actually only collected 3 or 4 metric points over that time frame. And it'll average those points to see if it matches the value that you've set. So, yeah, as you can see, it's not great if you suddenly have an influx of users coming in. You probably want to try and anticipate that as much as you can. Also, the default scale-down period is set to 2 hours. So there's this concept of a cool-down period where after a scaling action has been taken, so either a scale-up or a scale-down, it'll actually wait for a certain amount of time before any other actions are taken. So if you have that your usage has ramped up quite a lot over the course of the day and you've added an extra 10 instances, if that demand suddenly drops and you really don't need to be running 10 instances anymore, when autoscale scales down, it'll actually only remove one instance every 2 hours going on from there. So these are all default settings and they can be changed through the REST API again. But it's not all that obvious from what you see in the portal. Also, another thing to bear in mind is particularly around cloud services, the actual spin-up time for a new instance of a cloud service can be around 10 minutes long because it needs to create a new virtual machine, deploy some content onto it, add it into the load balancer, adjust a whole bunch of other settings in the background before that instance would actually fully come online and start making an impact to your deployment. So yeah, as you can see, autoscale definitely has its place. It is an awesome service, but it's just not that great for sudden changes. It's great for gradual changes over time. So if you have a website that has 10,000 users a day, plus or minus a few thousand, it'll help you a lot, adding or subtracting a few instances throughout the day as it goes along. It's great for anticipated changes. So if you know that every day at 8 a.m., you're going to need an extra few instances, you can set autoscale to do that for you without you having to go into the portal yourself and adding instances each day. And in doing that, it actually saves you a lot of money. But it's not great for sudden unexpected spikes. Cool, so what else can you do in Azure to automate your deployments? Recently, Puppet and Chef support has come on board in Azure. So what this is essentially in a way to automate the deployment and configuration of virtual machines. So you can do the same sort of thing in PowerShell, but Puppet and Chef are actually cross-platform. So they handle, you know, your Linux machines and whatever else you've got in your Azure environment. It's pretty similar to PowerShell, as I said before. So for example, this is a Chef recipe, you know, which creates a directory and adds a Windows feature. So it can be useful. I mean, if you know Chef, it's a great option to use for deploying machines. But you can actually do the same sort of stuff with PowerShell. It's just another option, up to you. The way that you use it, when you create a new virtual machine, you'll have seen under configuration extensions, there's actually an option for you to select Puppet or Chef, or the one at the bottom, Microsoft Custom Script, you know, which you can use to do the PowerShell version of that. Next up, the scheduler service. So this is a service which can run to invoke HTTP endpoints. It can also be used to add a message to Azure Storage queue as well. So it's more geared towards developers, if any devs in the room. If you have a service which you developed, say for example, dowork.aspx or updatestats.php, which does some back-end processing, maybe you need to run this once a day or every now and then. You know, previously, you actually had to find some way of executing this when you wanted to, whereas the scheduler service in Azure actually allows you to configure that endpoint to be invoked on schedule whenever you want. So configurable through the management portal again. You'll see that there's actually multiple methods that you can use. So it supports get and put, and I think auth and deletes as well. So you enter in the URI that you want it to invoke. And you can actually add in any other headers that you want as well. And if you need to authenticate before you use the web service, you know, there's an option to put some basic auth into there as well. Website automated backup. So automated backup is pretty key. As I said before, a lot of you are obviously probably already doing this in a lot of your deployments. Whereas if you have a website in Azure, you can actually set that to automatically backup on schedule every day if you want. And it can also include any databases which are referenced in its connection strings. Copies of those databases and websites will get stored in a blob storage account which you allocate. Again, configurable through the management portal. If you go to your website and go to the backups tab along the top, there you'll see that there's a few options which you can set. Next up, automated SQL backup. This is pretty cool. Came across this a little while ago. It's a new option available for the new SQL tiers for Azure SQL Database. If you haven't heard, the current web and business versions of the database are sort of being deprecated, and they're being replaced with new services called Basic, Standard, and Premium. What it does is automatically in the background, without you having to do anything, a full backup will get taken once a week of any of your databases up there. Differential backups once a day, and transaction log backups every 5 minutes. You don't need to worry about the storage of these backups. It's just all part of the service. And what that essentially allows you to do is you restore your SQL database to any point in time over the last 40 days, pretty much on demand, just by going into the management shell, clicking restore, and selecting at which point in time you want it to restore a copy of that database. Once you say go, it'll create a new copy of the database at the exact point in time which you've requested. So you can see that's a pretty awesome service. So that's pretty much a lot of the capability in Azure which you can use to automate your services. We've seen running powerful workflow with Azure Automation. Really powerful, really flexible. It's one of my favorite features in Azure at the moment. We've used it to do a lot of backups and deployments and monitoring. It's cool to have a play with. Definitely found it useful. We've seen scaling for performance. So AutoScale, great service if you've got changing demands. There are those gotchas which you need to keep in mind. I still think it's pretty cool, but you just need to work around that stuff. And if you have any dev friends, see if you can leverage the REST API to tweak those AutoScale settings down a bit further if you can't find the exact granularity you need in the new portal. They said the new Azure portal actually shows a lot more options around what you can do with AutoScale. Deployment and configuration. So Chef and Puppet available in Azure now, along with the traditional PowerShell option if you want to use for deploying and configuring virtual machines. It's a whole lot easier than running manual installations for each of your machines every time you need to do it. And lastly, automatic backup. So a lot of Azure services actually have automatic backup as an option. The new options around SQL database I think is pretty cool though. Sort of completely hands off, restore your database to any point in time over the last 30 days without you having to do anything. So, any questions? That was sort of a fair bit to get through. Didn't have any hands popping up during the time. So the question was, is Azure Automation compatible with SMA? Can you take stuff from SMA and stick it into Azure Automation? Yeah, absolutely. Provided that, obviously, in SMA, you will be able to use commandlets which refer to on-premises deployments. So, for example, things like Active Directory, and if you have any on-prem Exchange or PowerShell, that sort of stuff, you can use SMA to automate those deployments. You wouldn't be able to do that same thing in Azure Automation because there is kind of no on-prem deployment up there. If you have virtual machines that are running those sort of services, then you could execute that code against those virtual machines once you've done a PowerShell remoting session into them. So, yeah, in short, you can take what you've done on-prem and stick it into Azure Automation. It's exactly the same engine service running in the background. Cool. Anyone else? Yeah. Not directly. I'm thinking that's probably going to happen in the future because, as you saw, the actual editing interface there is built on Visual Studio Online. So I'm guessing that going forward, we'll see a lot more integration with Visual Studio Online in Azure Automation as well. Anyone else? Well, good. Cool. So hope you enjoyed that. We covered a fair bit. Hope it gave you some food for thought and give you some ideas as how to automate your own Azure deployments in order to save yourself some time, money, and effort. Cheers. Related content. So this is obviously the last session, so you can't go along to these sessions. But if you look on Channel 9, you'll see these sessions up there. I went to the ABCs of SMA session yesterday, and I thought that was really handy. Neil Peterson actually goes into a lot more depth around SMA and PowerShell workflow than I went into today. So if you're interested in that topic, please go and have a look at his session online. Cool. Find me at the closing drinks.